Okay, good morning. This is the second installment for the year. If you recall last time, we dealt with a question from Quito, Ecuador, of a rabbi who his whole life never ate or drank before davening. And now we have to give a shir before davening. And it goes without saying that if you're not going to drink a good cup of coffee before a shir early in the morning, you're probably not going to say very sensible things at best, perhaps to say even stupid things at worst. And therefore, it was a very important thing for him to drink before davening, and he asked if he can. He said the question is quadrupled on Shabbos for two reasons. Number one is davening is very late, so if he doesn't drink before davening, he won't be eating for a long time. And number two, you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos past chatzot, past midday. And we dealt last week with the fact that the rabbi happened to be wrong in his assumptions. In other words, it's not that you're not allowed to eat or drink before davening. You're not allowed to eat or drink in a way of gaiva, in which saying to God, I'm in charge of my own well-being, so I'll take a cup of coffee and I'll do everything possible. And then on the side, I'll also daven to you. You have to have your coordinates straight and your preferences, to be more precise, on track. And therefore, you have to daven to God first, keep you alive, and then you do everything else that you need to do in order to ensure that you stay alive. And therefore, if you eat or drink something before davening that doesn't connote gaiva, horniness, such as a cup of coffee, then it would be fine. So from that perspective, the rabbi was scot-free. His assumption of having something being prohibited and now is actually permitted, from that perspective, we're okay.
It occurs to me, sorry I didn't bring this up last week, but this may go beyond eating and drinking. In other words, if you wanted to go for a jog for an hour before davening, would that somehow be included in this general category?
That's a different story, and that's my own personal point of view that I didn't bring out last week, and that is that in my humble opinion, it's not so much that you're not allowed to eat or drink before davening, but rather you're not allowed to do things before davening that don't help you daven. In other words, the whole preference should be I should daven to Hashem that I'm alive and I'm well and I should continue to be alive and He should get me through the challenges of the day. Water, or is that?
Water.
Water, yes. Thank you. And therefore I think that if jogging would make you more awake for davening, then it would actually, thank you, serve your davening as opposed to diminish from it. I'm not saying it halachically, it has to be considered properly, but it's definitely room there, for sure.
How about
swimming? Same idea. In other words, things that would help you daven to Hashem. I wouldn't say, again, you have to put the barrier somewhere. You can't say, oh, everything helps me daven. Reading the newspaper helps me daven because I know what to daven for. I can hear that. That makes sense. Right? Going to the office first helps me daven because I know all the problems I'm going to deal with. There has to be a gvul for all of this. But I'm saying, jogging before davening has been dealt with in the poskim, and many have said that it's fine if it helps you daven. If, on the other hand, it does the opposite, then it would be prohibited, obviously. But anyway, that was in terms of eating and drinking before davening. We said eating probably not, drinking probably fine. Now we have to deal with the second question, which is far more harder than last week. And I hate to bring it up, but it's an important question, and there's a lot of ambiguity out there about this question. If a person was under the assumption that something's prohibited, and through his whole life he thought it was prohibited and that's what he did, he stayed away from it. And one jolly old day he finds out, hey, it's okay to drink a cup of coffee before davening. I didn't learn that particular chapter in the Code of Jewish Law. I was absent that day. Does he need to do Hataras Nedarim? Now, if you look in the top of the source sheet, it seems like probably he does. The Shulchan Aruch says, not in Orach Chaim, which we usually learn, but Yoredeya, Hilchos Nedarim, Siman Reish Yud Dalet. This is Yoredeya, the second section of Shulchan Aruch. This is chapter 214a. A person decided to do something, and he wanted to do it forever. He decided, I'm not drinking before davening, and this is the way a Jew gets up in the morning. He gets up, he goes to daven, and then he takes a drink. And he did it even once. Many people say three times, I'm not sure where that comes from. He did it even once. He got up in the morning, not allowed to drink before davening, went to shul or davened at home, and then he took a drink. Tzarich hatara, he needs to do hataras nedarim. And therefore, v'yiftach ba'charata, shemit charet, shenahakin l'shem neder. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, l'fikach harotzad l'nhog b'ksat varim amutarim. If a person wants to forbade himself from things that are permitted, our case of a cup of coffee before davening, which is permitted, but he forbade himself, it's better, yomar b'tchilat hanagato, she'no mekabel alav kin b'neder. He should say the famous words of, b'li neder. V'gam yomar she'en da'to linhol kin l'pama hu, b'pamaim she'etzeh. And he should only say, I'm doing it this once. Let's say you're in a community where there's a big chumrah. You don't want to accept that chumrah. You have to say, I'm only doing it b'li neder, just this once, in order not to embarrass the community, or in order not to be different. V'lo le'olam. The Mishnah Berurah is quick to point out in a different place. The Mishnah Berurah only wrote his perush. The Chafetz Chaim only wrote his perush on Orech Chaim. But in Orech Chaim, in the siman that deals with Ataras Nadarim that we usually do when? Where does Ataras Nadarim come out at? Up in Orech Chaim in our yearly calendar? Erev Rosh Hashanah. The Minhag Shel Mitzvah Nas Shana Sakined Dehu Rak Shehu Garba. A mitzvah that you do will be considered a neder only if you did it. In other words, it's your habit to do it. Not if you did something once, but it's your habit to do it. This guy, for his whole life, did not drink before davening. So therefore, this person, every single day of his life for years, has not been drinking coffee before davening, has not been drinking anything for that matter. All of a sudden, there's a need. Does, according to this Shulchan Aruch and this Mishnah Berurah, he's done it. He has to do it. Taras Nadarim. Now let's see if that assumption is correct. Yeah.
I would have thought most people do things out of habit, not because they took an oath not to eat, or a vow.
He
grew up in a home.
Once again, Bruce, you're bringing up an interesting point. We'll get to it. But according to this Shulchan Aruch, you don't have to say anything. You just have to do it. And if you do it, that's it. So let me give you another case just to make it tangible. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you can sit down during Kriyas HaTorah. Not the Baal Korah, the people listening. The Ramah agrees, but he brings a Chumrah from the Maharami Rutenberg, and he says it's a Chumrah to stand. If you didn't say anything, you just stood for Kriyas HaTorah once, and you wanted to do that, and now for some reason your back started to hurt, you want to sit down, you need a Taras Nadar. You don't have to say anything, you just have to do it.
If your intention was to continue the minhag.
Correct.
Well, that's
right, that's exactly it. So this guy started not to drink before davening. This is what he's been doing for years, point positive. It's not something that he did once. It's not like he was in an airport and there was no coffee stations open. He just always did that, even when the coffee stations were open. And therefore, it seems like he needs a Taras Nadar. Now we're going to see if that is correct. Now you're going to get into the world of responsa literature and see how do rabbis deal with this. Now you have a gentleman that's in Quito, Ecuador. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it properly. You want to know why? How many Jews do you think are there? Well, let me be precise here. We're going to get to this at the end of this year. Do you think it's so simple to do a Taras Nadarim in a place like that? There's a certain basic, at the end of the story sheet, you'll see the basic criteria of what you need in order to be on a Beis Din of a Taras Nadarim. You don't need to be a Dayan, you don't even need to be a rabbi. You need to know something. The question is, in a place like Quito, Ecuador, are there people like that? So it's not so simple. Number two, it's not so simple to say, yeah, anything I want to do, I don't want to do, I'll do what Taras Nadarim for. So I pledged allegiance. I pledged to give $1 million to the shul at the Kriyas HaTorah, and everyone clapped. And then Motzei Shabbos, I'll do a Taras Nadarim. That's not so simple. You can't just, whatever. There's two ways to do a Taras Nadarim. One is through Charata, one is through a Petach. We'll hopefully deal with that at the end of this year. Not every case is eligible. So let's see if he needs a Taras Nadarim. Number one, do you need a Taras Nadarim in this case? The guy didn't drink his whole life before davening. Now he wants to drink, or he needs to. It seems like the Shulchan Aruch has a stira, or to be more precise, brings two points of view. Shulchan Aruch in a different siman in Hilchos Nadarim, in the same siman, Reish Yedalet, again 214. Aval anoagim isur bedvarim amutarim. Michamat shesovrim shehem asurim. But if a person didn't do something because he thought it was forbidden, lo havikilu kabalam beneder. It's not like a neder. So our poor rabbi thought his whole life that it's usur to drink before davening. Came along the rabbis who we asked and said, I'm sorry, your assumption's wrong. You're allowed to drink before davening. What does the Shulchan Aruch say?
Doesn't need to.
If I knew it was permitted and I said, I'm going to take a chumrah upon myself, then you need a Taras Nadarim. In this case, he thought it was forbidden. He thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, don't drink before davening. Turned out he was wrong. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't need Hataras Nedarim, but the Shulchan Aruch on the left side of the page brings a different point of view. The Yesh Misha Omer, there are those that say, She'im Toev V'Nahag Isur B'Davar HaMutar, Nishal U'mitirim Lo B'Shlosha Kein Hataras Nedarim. And some people say that even in this case, where he didn't do something because he thought it was Aser, you need Hataras Nedarim. So there's two points of view in the Shulchan Aruch in our case. The rabbi thought it was forbidden. It's not that he took upon himself a prohibition, but rather he thought it was forbidden. According to one point of view in the Shulchan Aruch, you don't need a Taras Adarim. According to another point of view, you do. Now, just for you to understand, when the Shulchan Aruch brings two points of view, this is the code of Jewish law, which one do we usually paskin like? I wish. No.
Is Yesh Omer a majority?
Right, no. Usually the Shulchan Aruch, if he brings his point of view, or a point of view, obviously the Shulchan Aruch, as you know, is Rav Yosef Karo, he wrote a Beit Yosef with all the points of view, mm-hmm. And the Shulchan Aruch should have been his table of contents to the Beit Yosef. So the irony of history is that today, who learns the Beit Yosef? Whoever's learning for Smicha, and every Jew learns the Shulchan Aruch only. But in the Shulchan Aruch, if he brings a point of view without saying a name, and then he says, V'yesh Misha Omer, not in all cases, but 98% of the cases, the majority of poskim will say his true point of view is like the not the Yesh Omrim, but the former point of view. Stam v'yesh omrim, halacha kestam. So therefore, just like when you learn Mishnah, the Mishnah brings a point of view and then says, Rabbi Meir Omer, we usually poskim like the Tana Kama. Same thing in Shulchan Aruch. And as you see here on our source sheet, the Shach says exactly those words. V'achshav nitbarer shehu mutar. A person thought it was usher, now he thought it's... Now he finds out that it's okay, like our cup of coffee, which we thought was usher, and now we find out it's okay. Umin hagan haya b'ta'ut shenistapku b'davar, and their whole minhag was based on a mistake. V'achshav shenitbarer shemutar, and after he asked the rabbi, he found out it was permitted. Lo havi kilu kibalam b'neder. It's not a neder, and therefore you don't need a taras nedarim. V'niradahu adinim ayus furim shehaya yisur gadol. V'ashachar zenitbarer shen bo yisur kolkach. And the same thing is true. If a guy thought this is a big prohibition, then he finds out, hey, it's only derabanan, it's only a minhag, don't go nuts. Even then, we'll have a neder. And we have many people like that walking around the streets. People think that, you know, if you eat gelatin, it's worse than eating on Yom Kippur. Oh, we find out that gelatin's not so bad. Many rabbanim allow it, even from treif animals. Just because in the OU doesn't allow it, doesn't mean that in Israel we don't allow it. Even then, it's not a neder. And the Igros Moshe Rav Moshe Feinstein, bringing us to the 20th century, says exactly the same words in Igros Moshe Yerodea Chelak Aleph Simon Mem Zayin, and this is already a responsum, meaning a real true case. He says, and I quote, "Uveim echad nahag lachmir in nesar medin minah gimel palmim taya imar kavanato lachmir afim adinu laatir v'kol sheken biyada beatzmo sheyesh laatir u'mikol makom nahag isur yesh alav isur neder nahag gimel palmim." If a person knew it was mutter and he did it anyway, he decided to forbid himself. He has nita taras nedarim. But, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, mechmir mishum sheya savur shasur medina. If a person was machmir, stringent, because he thought it was forbidden, then says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you don't need a taras nedarim. Because he found out it was all a mistake. So in our case, the first reason why this rabbi probably doesn't need a taras nedarim, he can just get up the next morning and drink a cup of coffee, is that his whole life, he was mistaken. Okay, I'm sorry that you're mistaken. I feel bad for you. You suffered all these years. Caffeine withdrawal. I feel for you. All right, you missed that chapter. Happens, okay. But you were wrong. Sorry. So he can get up the next morning, drink a cup of coffee, no ataras nadarim, everything okay. Why? Because the Shulchan Aruch brings that point of view
first.
The Yesh Misha Omer says he needs ataras nadarim. But the first point of view in the Shulchan Aruch is, if your assumption is that something is Usher, but you find out that your assumption is wrong, you can just go ahead and do it.
The other way around also?
Hmm?
If the assumption was it was permitted, that was your assumption, and you found out it was wrong.
Well, obviously. What do you mean? You found that you thought pig was permitted, and you found out it's usher. What, you're going to say, no, my minhag is to eat pig?
No, do you need to do something?
What do you need to do? You have to give me an example.
Tshuva.
You have to give me an example. The second reason why, in this case, I think you don't need a taras nedarim, according to this tshuva that we quoted from Bamarav Bazak last week, They bring another point of view that I think is important. So the first assumption that we have is that if you do something, to be more precise, you don't do something simply because you thought it was forbidden, but you found out you were wrong, you can just go ahead and do it. Like if you think gebrachs is aser min haTorah on Pesach, and you find out that, hey, it's actually mutter, and there's no family custom here, nothing. You just thought in error that it's aser. And you're not from a Hasidic background, it's not your family custom. You can just eat gebrachs. There's an Aruch Or Chaim, exactly like that. Finished.
And if it turns out the kidneyot were wrongly, the takana should have been revoked 100 years ago.
When we find out, we'll deal with it. The kidneyot actually is an example where we forbade ourselves in the Ashkenazic communities, knowing that it's mutter. After all, the Gemara itself says that it's mutter. Rav Yochanan ben Uri is the descending point of view. But there's a point of view, but the main point of view in the Gemara is, when the Gemara says that on the Seder night you need to put 2 tafshilim on the Seder plate, one of the examples is rice. So we knew it was permitted, but still we ostered it on ourselves for whatever reason. That's truly a neder, and it's not so simple to be matir it. Just because, like that, you have to think about it. So first and foremost, if your assumption is that something is forbidden, like drinking before davening, and you find out you're allowed to drink before davening, just drink. That seems to be the general point of view in the Shulchan Aruch. There is a Yesh Mishomer that says otherwise, but the Shach and Rav Digos Moshe both repeat the Shulchan Aruch. Number 2. Let's assume that this gentleman says, okay, I found that you're not allowed to drink before davening if you need it. I don't need it! I don't need it! As I said last week, my Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Avracha, did not drink before davening. I don't need it. I can daven first, have all the kavana in the world. I don't need it. I only need it now while I'm a rabbi in Quito, Ecuador. Am I going to be here for my whole life? Take a wild guess.
Probably not.
So when I retire from Quito, Ecuador, and I go on to a different community, or I go back to civilian life, I go back to my original custom. Only here, while I'm here, during these years, I have to drink because I'm giving a shir before davening. Point positive, if tomorrow morning there's no one in the shir, and we decide to cancel the shir, I'll go back to not drinking before davening. What's the halacha in such a case? Here we have a big problem. Because the Shulchan Aruch that we quoted before seems to say, Hilchach Misha Ragili Tanota Anichli Fnei Rosh Hashanah, there's a custom to fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah, or the week before Rosh Hashanah, or Sheben Rosh Hashanah L'Yom HaKippurim during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, U Misha Ragil Shalol Echol Basar Vat Shalol Lishtot Yain Mi Rosh Chodesh O Mi Yudzayin Betamuz, and whoever has a custom not to eat meat and drink wine, either from the 17th of Tammuz or from the Rosh Chodesh, from the 9 days. You have to remember, the Shulchan Aruch is on the assumption that the only time meat and wine is forbidden is Shavua Shechalbo, and even that's a Chiddush, because in our Gemara, you know, up until the Su'udam of Seket, the final meal, if it doesn't turn out on Shabbos, you're allowed to eat meat and drink wine. But a person has a custom not to, eat, let's say, drink wine and eat meat from Yudzayin B'Tammuz, all the way from the 17th of Tammuz. And now, for whatever reason, Rotzeh Lachzor Bo Michamat She'eino Bari, and he wants to now not continue his custom. Why? Because he's not healthy. He needs the meat. He needs the wine. His doctor prescribed him this, whatever it is. Tzarich Gimu She'atiru Lo, he needs Atar V'Sadarim. So he did not actively eat meat or drink wine for a while. And now he has a need, just like this rabbi did not eat before davening, and now he has a need to drink before davening because he gives a shir. He needs ataras natarim. However, if you look on the left side of the page, when the Shulchan Aruch brings the custom in Aruch Chaim of fasting on Erev Rosh Hashanah, says the Mishnah Brura there, this is Simon Tav Kuf Pei Aleph, Seif Katan Yotet, in the name of the Mogen Avraham, B'makom sheyesh miktzat choli, yesh lahakel b'chol elu ata'anitim, ve'ein tzarich hatara, im lo shemitaneh yoter ima shenagu ha'tzibur. And all these fast days, the optional fast days, such as Erev Rosh Hashanah, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, says the Mishnah Berurah, we're not talking about Tzom Gedalia, we're talking about beyond Tzom Gedalia, says the Mishnah Berurah, there's a miktzat choli. What's a miktzat choli? So in halacha we have degradations. There's a cholah sheyesh bo sakana, that's bikoach nefesh. This whole shir is in totally irrelevant. Bikoach nefesh doche kol haTorah kula. Next, second level. I just said cholah sheyesh bo sakana. Take a wild guess what the next one is.
Shein bo sakana.
What's a cholah shein bo sakana?
Yeah, He's very sick, but not in danger of dying?
He's not in danger of dying, but he's bedridden. He wouldn't go to work that day. That's the second degradation. The third degradation is? Mechush ba'alma. You have a headache, a cold, whatever it is. We're on the third degradation here already. Right? Miktzat choli? Just don't fast. You don't need taras nedarim. You wake up with a cold during Aseret Yemei Tshuva because the air conditioner was on too high during Rosh Hashanah davening and you caught a cold. Just don't fast. Well, again, we're not talking about Tzom Gedalia per se. We're talking about beyond Tzom Gedalia. So here you have a situation of a rabbi who has a miktzat choli. Why? Because if he gets up in the morning and gives a shir before he eats, he's going to fail weak, or he's not going to be able to give a shir properly. Seems like the Shulchan Mishnah Berurah is very makil on, even on a fast day, kal v'chomer the istir, quote unquote, before davening. And yet the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that if you have a custom not to fast between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and you're now not healthy, you need a taras nedarim. So what's the answer? So as you look in the bottom of the page, everybody quotes the Shach. The Shach says, when you learn Yoraderi, you learn the Shach. There's a difference. What's the difference? Very simple. I'm going to say it out loud. The Shach, the Dogel Mervava, everybody quotes the same one. They go back to the Dogel Mervava. You can trace it back to the Shach, though some people say he's not exactly like the Dogel Mervava, but I didn't see a difference. And they all say like this. If you have a custom that you're going to continue to do for the rest of your life, but it happens to be once you can't, you don't need a taras nedarim. Because you're not stopping to do it, you're going to continue. But for whatever reasons, this year, next year, for 2 years, for 3 years, you're not going to do it. However, if there is a custom that you're stopping totally, then and only then do you need a taras nedarim. Therefore, says the Dogel Mervava, was a Noda B'Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Leib, the Noda B'Yehuda, who wrote a perush on the Shulchan Aruch of the Dogel Mervava, basically says like this. If you fast between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and it happens to be a bris, do you need a taras nedarim to eat at that bris?
No.
No. Why?
It's
a
mitzvah.
So? Why would the Sudat Mitzvah cancel the fast? So you're saying we're going with the rules and regulations of Erev Pesach. Very cute. Very nice, actually. However, says the Dogel Mervava, no. Because it happens to be on the Tuesday of the year 5777, in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's a bris. But next year, on this very same day, I'm going to fast. However, if a person is 67 years old, and his doctor tells him you should no longer fast, then he's no longer going to fast for the rest of his life. Then, and only then, does he need a taras nedarim. Plugging this back in to our rabbi is sitting there. He would like not to eat and drink before davening, but he has a need. According to what the Dogel Mervava says in the Shach, he doesn't need a taras nedarim. Why? Because only during the course of the time that he's in this community will he not eat and drink, just like there happens to be a bris. But when he goes back to not being in that community, he goes back to Israel, he moves on, he'll go back to it. Just to quote the Dogel Mervava. When the Shulchan Aruch says you need a taras nedarim is when you want to cancel it totally. And he's never going to go back to doing it. Then you need a taras nedarim. But it happens to be that on a specific day you had a cold. So therefore, this rabbi has two reasons why he doesn't need a taras nedarim. Number one, when you assume something is forbidden and you find out it's permitted, according to the point of view in the Shulchan Aruch, which is Stam, you don't need a taras nedarim. And number two, even if you want to say you do need a taras nedarim, this particular rabbi is not totally eradicating his not drinking before davening, but rather what?
He's going to go back to it.
So case scenario, if a person stands for Kriyas HaTorah, that's his minhag, he has to stand. And then he had a back operation, which tells him he's not allowed to stand. And he's in a wheelchair for a month. And after this month, his doctor promises him, don't worry, you'll be able to stand again. And you'll be able to stand as long as you want. Does he need a taras nedarim according to this?
No.
No! There's a small delay in him fulfilling his custom. Could be a delay of a year, 2 months, and eventually he's going back to it. So there's two reasons why this rabbi doesn't need a Torah Sanhedrin. Number one, when you assume something is us and you find out it's mutter, and that's why you weren't drinking before davening, you don't need a Torah Sanhedrin. And number two, even if he knows it's usr, and he wants to continue his custom, he will continue his custom when he leaves this community. Going on, we have a third reason to be makil according to this particular responsum, but I have to admit, I did not find it in writing. I say again, I looked and I looked and I looked, and I think it's a good logical svara, which is sometimes even stronger than a pasuk. As you know in the Gemara many times says, Walamali pasuk svara ninhu? Why need a pasuk? It's logical. And this seems to be logical. When we say neder, what's a neder? So as you know, in halacha, there's two things. There's a neder and there's a shvua. What's the difference between a neder and a shvua?
One's on the person, one's on the object.
Right. Whatever it might be, how does something become a neder? How do you create a neder? The Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Nedarim, before Simon Reish Yudalit, which is 214, exactly 10 simonim back, 204, Reish Dalit, very simple and easy to remember. Ikar neder amur batura. This is the real neder. This is the real McCoy. Who shiyat pis medavar hanador. O sha'omer yaser laikacha vekacha. O sha'amar kikar ze ala yisir. How do you make a neder? You say it. How does the Rambam call his book that talks about nedarim and shvuos and his Yad Chazaka sefer? Hafla'a. Ish ki afli lindor nedel azil Hashem. It's not enough to be a nazir. You have to say it. But, just in case you're worried, oh, he didn't say it, he just didn't drink. One second. There's another way to make a neder. We just said at the beginning of Shir. How was it?
Just
do it. You stood up for Kriyas HaTorah. How does the Shulchan Aruch say? I quote from the beginning of the Shir, but it's right here. Im b'shashin chilin hog, this. Shulchan Aruch is talking in the positive. You did something like stand up for Kriyas HaTorah. Actively. What is this guy doing?
He's not drinking.
Is that a neder? We said to make a neder, you have to do something, even once, or you have to say it. So here I have to admit, they bring it in and they say tzarichiyun. Why they say tzarichiyun? Because we've saw a whole cadre of sources that say and talk about if a person fasts. When a person fasts, he doesn't say anything, he just doesn't eat and drink. On the other hand, you could say there is a case in scenario in halacha where you maybe not be eating and drinking, but you can't say you're fasting. For example, Friday night when you come home from shul, you're not allowed to eat nor drink before you do what?
Kiddush.
Does anyone in their right mind think that when you walk home from shul Friday night, you're fasting? There's a difference between fasting versus just not eating. If you finish Shalosh Shudos on Shabbos before Shkia, come Shkia, you're not supposed to eat or drink until you make Avdolah. You can't make Avdolah yet, you're in a twilight zone right now between Shkia and Seita Kochavim. Does anyone in their right mind think they're fasting? First of all, they're full from Shabbos. But second of all, they're not fasting, they're just not eating. So if I'm right now giving a shir, I'm not eating. Does anyone think I'm fasting? Fasting, there's an actual definition in halacha what fasting is. It's a ta'anit sha'ot for a few hours, and there's a full-fledged ta'anit from morning, let's say dawn to dusk, and there's a full day, which is 25 hours. You can't just say, I'm fasting. So this gentleman wasn't drinking before davening. Can you really say that he did something? He didn't say it. He didn't say, Ha'eini mekabel alai. And he also didn't do anything. He just prevented himself from making a cup of coffee.
It's still a minhag.
On the other hand, you could say it's still a minhag. Because why? He did it every day. He did it every day. No. Point positive, if someone would offer him a cup of coffee, what would he probably say? Before he asked the shayla, what would he probably say?
No,
because I don't drink before davening. So again, that's a svara that you can add in. That perhaps when you do something, it needs a Torah Sedarim, but when you prevent yourself from doing something, you don't. But I have not found it in any Rishon that I've looked at or Achron that I've looked at. In this particular tshuva, they bring it as a tzarichiyun, perhaps. But the first two reasons are solid. And I just want to go over them again. Number one, when you assume something is forbidden, when you find out it's mutter, you don't need a Torah Sedarim. And number two, when you are planning to go back to fulfilling your custom, just now there's a delay for whatever reasons because you happen to be in a place where it's impossible, then you don't need a Taras Nedarim. Yes?
Something against that Sfara, I believe, is I know that if a Ashkenazi marries a Sfaradi woman and wants to start eating kidneyot on Pesach, sorry to revert to kidneyot.
Yes.
Sensitive topic.
Yes, it is.
But then normally we paskin that he does need Hatar Nedarim.
Correct.
So that also, if he's been refraining his whole life from eating
right.
kidneyot.
Correct.
That would go against.
Correct.
The Sfara.
It seems like this Sfara goes against many things that we said. We mentioned fasting and indeed kidneyot and many other things. Where you prevent yourself from something and now you want to do it. The majority of poskim have said that's like a nether. Hanhaga doesn't just mean doing something actively, but even preventing yourself from doing something. Usually a neder, by the way, I have to say this honestly, if you want to be intellectually honest, what's a neder usually? You say something is usser to me. You don't say something is permitted to me. So therefore, definitely it's a svara. I think it's good, but I don't think it's enough because of what I said. But the two reasons we said originally, I think, are very good and solid. And therefore, if this rabbi would ask, I'd say you don't need a Taras Nedarim. First of all, your assumption was wrong. It's permitted to drink before davening. And number two, even if you say, okay, I want to continue it, you will continue it after you finish. So this happens many times, and I'll just give you an example. Many people, when they live in Israel, they drink milk. And the milk here is Chol of Yisrael by definition, because the majority come from Jews. Jews milk the cows. They go to Chutz Laaretz, the majority of milk. It's Chalav Akum. There's a Gzeira against Chalav Akum. There's a Mishnah, there's a Gemara, there's a Shulchan Aruch. This is not a Chumrah, this is real, the real McCoy. So you go to Chutz Laaretz, you need milk, you need cheese, or you need any of the dairy products, you've got a problem. Everything's Chalav Akum. It's kosher. It's just Chalav Akum. It was milked by a non-Jew without the supervision of a Jew. So what do? Person's down in Hotzplatz. There's no Chol of Yisrael. So either he decides, I'm going to become lactose intolerant. Or what do you do? What do you do? So this person, I ask him first and foremost, did you ever mekabel on yourself not to eat anything but Chol of Yisrael? By saying it? He'll probably say, no, I never said it. I just lived in Israel. That was the yogurt in the store. Okay. Did you ever in any which way refuse to take a Hershey bar? Because you drink Chol of Yisrael, again, he didn't say it, but he refused it, like a refusing a cup of coffee before davening. The answer is no, it just never came up. It never came. I lived in Israel. Now I'm in Chutz Laaretz. What do I do? So I would ask him honestly. There's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein that says that the company milk under company supervision is like Chol of Yisrael, because it basically fulfills what Chazal wanted, and that is supervision, that it's not pig's milk or any other treif milk. It can ascertain that. That's what seems to be the halacha, in my opinion, if you ask me a psak. Then I'd ask it. Then he'd probably say, fine, thank you, didn't know, goodbye. And if he said that, that's fine. Again, his assumption is it's usser. Turns out to be, hey, the assumption's incorrect. Chol of Akum is usser, but Rav Moshe Feinstein said, the company supervised milk in normal countries is good enough. But let's say this gentleman says, you know what, even though I know that tshuva, I'd like to be machmir and Chol of Yisrael in the future. But right now, I'm in a place where it's impossible. According to what we just said in the name of the Dago Mervava, he has a need right now. It's a Dirabanan here, we're not talking about a Doraisa. He may not need a Taras Nedarim. Why?
He's going to go back.
First of all, he never said anything. Second of all, he never really actively did it. And thirdly, he's going back to it. Fourthly, he didn't even know it was Usser. So that's a very practical question that comes up many a times. Again, if you want to be machmer, do a Taras Nedarim, bevakasha, but it's not so simple. We're about to get to why it's not so simple.
There's a similar question if you had kept 5 or 6 hours if you're eating dairy, and the community you're now in, it's whatever's not practical. Everyone there seems to be 3. There's a lot of functions you have to participate in, the family, the kids, the school, so. Can you switch that?
So let's plug it into what we just said. Your custom is 6 hours. That's, by the way, a very strong custom. That means that throughout your life, when they offered you ice cream after 4 hours, what did you say?
Okay.
No, thanks. I wait 6 hours. So you actively did it, and it's like a neder. It's a neder of the mishpacha. It's a minhag mishpacha. And now you're in a community like Holland where within an hour, after they serve meat, they're going to serve milk. And you're the rabbi, or you're in the community. What are you going to do, refuse for the next 4 or 5 years? then I think you do need Tataras Nadarim. Because what's the reason? If you say, I'm going back to my old custom, but right now there's a need. My answer, my question is, it's not exactly like our rabbi in Quito, Ecuador. Because what's the big need? What's the need? If the need is the community will look at you and say, oh, he doesn't trust our kashrus, that is a need. I admit. It's a need. It's like a miktzat choli on a fast day. And maybe you don't need a Torah Sturm. You plan to go back to it, or at home you're going to continue it. But right here now you're not. Could be. On the other hand, if there is no need, well, why do you have to eat the ice cream?
His little kids are in the local schools. Right,
right.
After an hour, his wife heard that he
right.
was involved with official
exactly. So in that situation...
It's not us, sir.
You know that it's a minhag, and you know that you have to wait between meat and milk, and this is what you do, and it's written in poskim. It's not that it's not us, sir. It is us, sir. Unlike the coffee before davening, this is us, sir. But there's different customs of how us, sir, it is. And you, for whatever reason now, want to go ahead and stop it because you're in a community, there is halachos that govern when you move from one community to the next, and maybe you don't need a taras nedarim. That's something we didn't bring in here because it wasn't part of our shir. There's a famous perek in Pesachet Psachim called Makom Shenahagu. When you go from a place that they are martyr something to a place that they aser it, what do you do? I would say in that case, there's more room to say you do need a taras nedarim because first, you don't have the two things here. You have one. That is that you're planning to go back to your old custom once you get back to Israel. But I'd say it's a little shaky. Why is it shaky? First of all, who says you're going back to Israel? I can write a book on that will probably be entitled Something Funny Happened to Me on the Way to the Airport. And I can probably write it right now and 200 pages will be filled with many cases of something funny happened to me when I said I'm going to make Aliyah or I'm going back to Israel. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, even if you say, no, at home we continue our minhag, it's just in school we tell our kids do what everyone else does, unlike our rabbi, it's not that the assumption is that it was usher and it happened to be mutter. Here the assumption is it is usher. That's we paskin like the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, that says 6 hours. There is another custom out there, very legitimate, 1 hour, fine, but it's not the same.
6 to 1 is very dramatic. Would it be different if it's 3 to 1 or 5 to 3?
What do you mean 5 to 3?
3 hours. 3 hours to 1 hour or 5 to 3.
I don't think there's any difference. I don't think there's any difference.
It's the same question.
There's definitely a Gemara in Masechet Chulin that says you have to wait between meat and milk. It doesn't say what. It just says that a great Tana said that his father was a great tzaddik. He can wait 24 hours. But I'm not just a tzaddik. I wait from meal to meal. And the question is, what is meal to meal? So the customs that are brought down in Poskim that I know of is 1 hour and 6 hours. The 3 hour is a little more shaky. It's hard to find a lot of validity, but it's there. It's there. Again, I don't think there's a difference, and I don't think that you can go from that.
Tana who said he used to, as soon as he ate the meat, and if he swallowed the
correct,
meat.
Correct. We don't Poskim like that, Tana, but yeah. We Poskim like that from Milchik to Fleishik, by the way. We just wash our mouth out, clean the table, and that's what we do. We don't Poskim like that for hard cheese or for Milchik, from Fleishik to Milchik.
How about changing Nusach Tefillah on an individual basis?
What's the need?
He's asked to daven.
Well, I know, and you know, hundreds of tens of people, okay, here in Ephrat. They've gone through the yeshiva system here in Israel, and they changed from Ashkenaz to Sfarad because they got used to it. And they've remained Sfarad their entire lives, even though their father and their grandpa, for sure, and maybe even generations before, were Ashkenaz.
Right. So that's a little beyond the scope of this shir, because there are two elements come in. First of all, you're not stopping to daven, you're davening, albeit a little different. So I'm not so sure you're changing anything dramatically. You're saying hodu before mizmor shir, that a big change, nakdishcha before not nikadesh, that a huge change? I'm not so sure. Here and there, there are changes. Like yishtabach, the bracha changes. The bracha is written in the Gemara with regard to the end of the Seder, and there it really does change the bracha. So the first thing that comes in, is that really a change? The second element you have to consider is, can you change when you find out that the real nusach is X? And there will be a big debate around the table, what is the real nusach? So many Litvakin will say, the real nusach is nusach Ashkenaz. Came along to Hasidim and made this new thing up. There used to be nusach Ari, or like the Sfaradim Davin, and then there was nusach Ashkenaz. Came along the Hasidim, they made some sort of a pshara, some sort of a combination, quote-unquote, compromise between the two. What is that? It's a wrong nusach, so I'm going back to the real nusach. So, you know, my whole life I was doing something wrong, now I'm doing something right, like our first element in this particular shir. But in this particular situation, I think that there's a lot more to consider. It's beyond the scope of the shir because you're changing the minhag of your family. And once the family has done it for so many years, can you just go ahead and change it? And that brings us to the last source on the page, which we can't go into now, but that's exactly the last source, and you can read it at home. How do you do a taras nedarim? Let's assume everything we said is off. You need a taras nedarim. How do you do a taras nedarim? Shulchan Aruch tells you how to do a taras nedarim. Misha nadar v'nit charet. Yesh lo takana yedei charata. V'afilu nadar be'elokei Yisrael. Ketzad yatzeh. Yelech etzel chacham umche, degamer v'savir. V'yemen yachid muche yelech etzel shalosh et yohot. V'hu degam lilhu v'sferi. V'gam yodim liftoach lo petach. V'yatiru lo. V'ha'id na'en mumche shira'ui la'atir b'yachid. So the Shulchan Aruch says you can go to one smart, amazing rabbi, but there's no such thing. You have to go to three normal individuals, the three people in shul, and you say, please, I need you to do a Taras Nedarim for me. What's a Taras Nedarim? Either you find there's a mechanism called Charata, or there's a mechanism called Petach. What's the difference? If you look in the bottom of the page, you'll see one is that a person is totally feels terrible that he took upon himself a neder. Like a person said, I won't smoke because it's not healthy. And then for 2 days he's walking around and he's shaking and he's screaming at his children because he's not smoking. You know what happens when you have nicotine all your life and you don't smoke. The guys, and you can see people like that on Shabbos. If they don't have that gum, stay away from them. Right? So this guy's walking around and he's shaking and he goes, oh my gosh, I didn't know what I do. I don't like what I originally did. I want it out. That's called charata. Very good. What's petach? Petach is, it's a good minhag, it's a wonderful minhag, it's a right standing up for Kriya Sator, it's beautiful, it's like Mamad Har Sinai, we stood there, we're going to stand here. I like the Maharam Mirutenberg, I know the whole lumdus of the Rav, that it's like Mamad Har Sinai, but my back is hurting. Now, so it's not that he says, I was sorry that I took upon myself this minhag originally, it means right now, from this day forward, I have a reason to stop it. That's a petach. You find an opening. Meaning everything was great, it's a good minhag, but now, the first one is charata. I should have never taken this neder upon myself. And you have to see if there's reasons for that. Second one, there's a petach. Can you find a petach? Says the Shulchan Aruch, you need three people that at least know the difference between these two things, and he uses the words, v'hu degam lilhu v'sviri. And the Shach explains what that means. Lomdim imeimem halachot u'mevinim. These are not talmidei chachamim, these are people that if you teach them, they understand. They're holding a little bit with Torah or whatever. But if you go to someone that's never opened a Gemara in his whole life and you say, here, sit down in the base din here for Ataras Nedarim Erev Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't know what the words mean. What did he just say? I heard the word Shimuna. I don't even know what Shema means. Well, what is he talking about? Matzah Shurik can be on the base din for Ataras Nedarim. Number two, I tell him, can you find a petach? What's a petach? What's a charata? What's a charata? So these are the people that you, if you come to a shir and you explain it to them, within 2-3 minutes, they chop. But if not, it's a big problem. So if you want to go ahead and say to this rabbi, Nina Taras Nadarim, I'm not so sure it's simple for him to do in wherever he is, because I'm not so sure he'll find people for it. And indeed, it's not in every case that you can say, yeah, we're Matir Neder. You can't just Matir Neder. You have to Matir Neder when there's either room for Charata or room for a Petach. And not always is there room for a Charata or a Petach. I should have never pledged the money. Why? Don't know. So there's no charata and there's no petach. If a person says, I didn't know over Shabbos that I just lost $50,000 in the stock market. Had I known, I would never have pledged. That's a very legitimate petach. That's a very legitimate petach. Or a person has a minhag not to eat cheese on Friday. I don't know why. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, they say this story. And Shavuos came out on Friday, and his new wife, second wife, made a nice meluche kiddush. And he's now stuck. He's a new wife. You know, he wants to solidify this marriage. And he has his minhag not to eat meluche. He never told his new wife. And now there's a big kiddush. So he comes in front of three people, and he asks them, you guys learned a little bit, right? He says, he was, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky lived in Muncie, so I'm assuming the three people learned a little bit. Yes, we learned a little bit. Okay, listen. I have a good minhag, it's a nice minhag, but I didn't know when I took the minhag that would produce anguish to my new wife. So I ask you to do a Taras Nedarim for me now. Absolutely legitimate. Absolutely, so legitimate, it was written in the art scroll book about him. Even Artsko wouldn't edit this one out. Typical, very, very clear. But if a person goes ahead and says, I have a minhag not to eat cheese on Friday, I don't eat milchiks Friday, and he comes along and he's walking around and it's Shavuos, and the cheesecake with the chocolate looks great. And he says, I have a crave for cheesecake. Can you be a good Jew without cheesecake? Probably a more healthy Jew without cheesecake. Says the, you can go along and do matir neder? I'm not so sure. So anyway, in terms of our rabbi, we're probably scot-free. Number one, his assumption was wrong. He's allowed to eat before davening. And number two, even if you say he wants to continue his minhag, he will when he leaves this community. And those are probably the two main reasons why he doesn't need a taras nedarim. But if you do say you need a taras nedarim, it's not so simple just to matir anyone that comes along and says, hey, I took a neder, just goodbye. Nedarim are a serious thing. And therefore, what did Chazal say? Excuse me. My mistake. What does Shlomo HaMelech say in a Megillah we're going to read on Sukkot and Kohelet? Better not to take a vow than to take a vow and not fulfill it. It's not so simple.
Can he Skype this?
Good question.
Well, let's make it more complicated. Would it be better under the circumstances, knowing the community in Quito, to Skype with three Talmidei
Chachamim? Good question. Again, you don't need Talmidei Chachamim. I want to be clear. You need people that learn, understand. Within 5 minutes, they understand the mechanism over here. And that's what you need. And it could be. We have to deal with it. All the Skyping today is a very big, that is one of the biggest issues in response to literature that I know today. Just think of the example I gave before, Chol of Yisrael. It has to be supervised by a Jew. Is it good enough for him to Skype in? To Skype the milking.
Right.
You know, they haven't solved the whole Chol of Yisrael issue. Come on. Any farm, we put a little camera there, and there's a Jew sitting, and finish. The milk to this town will be no problem. He doesn't have to leave his house. What is milking time? The only problem is milking time sometimes is 4 o'clock in the morning. That's a very big problem of comfort, but it would really solve a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. The words, two words have been used interchangeably in the discussion here. Need and want. And they're used interchangeably. How do you distinguish between what's a need and what?
I forgot your name, I'm sorry.
I'm Yoel.
Yoel, what you just said, totally, in a much better way than myself, concisely summed up Ataras Nadarim. When you sit on a Beis Din, there's needs and there's wants. You have to make sure there's a need. It's not enough to have a want. And we have to make that distinction in life, and definitely when you do a Taras Nedarim. You're absolutely correct. Not everyone can. Not everyone thinks, you know, yeah, no problem. Not everything is a need. Sometimes it's not a need. Yaakov Kamenetsky had a need. He wants to not go ahead and offend his wife. That's a need. That's a very important need. But a guy has a crave for cheesecake. That's a want. With due respect, that's a want. And you have to make that distinction in life. And many a times we don't make that distinction between needs and wants. We think everything is a need. Not everything is a need in life. And indeed, when you do a Taras Nedarim, that's one of the things you have to take into consideration. I would say that is the main thing you have to take into consideration.